Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing emoji investing, crypto tax refunds, and when buying used costs you more.
That's right, Joel. This is our Friday flight. We've got a bunch of stories to get to this week, and we're going to talk about how they impact our money. The first one you mentioned, you're talking about, you know, investing in emojis. I feel like that's such a weird phrase. Like 20 years ago, that would not have been something anybody would have understood.
No, they would have thought you were speaking another language or that you were an alien from another planet.
But here we are talking about it. We'll get to that story later on.
Do you have a favorite emoji, by the way?
I don't know if I have a favorite. I would say my most used one is probably like the flexed bicep. Either that one or the grimace face, like where the face is showing its teeth.
Okay. You know, like, the only one I use with regularity is the thumbs up.
Like
some people can tell a whole story with emojis through text message. And I'm one of those people who like literally the thumbs up just to be like,
you like
cool.
That one?
It's not even that I love it. It's just that it's the most efficient way to communicate.
Well, I like to use some different ones. I like the guy where he's like shrugging, where he's just like, I don't know. Because I feel like I often use that when
or
it comes to
facepalm one.
Yeah, I don't use that one as much for whatever reason.
I think my wife likes the facepalm. Probably because I'm usually doing something that's facepalm worthy.
Do you use the poof, like the burst of wind one?
Yeah, behind the bike.
I could see you.
On occasion.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, but before we get to our Friday flight, Matt, stories we found interesting this week, I just quickly wanted to bring something up where there was an article I read, and it was basically saying that everybody who owns a home should consider having a HELOC on hand, right? A home equity line of credit.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah. And I was wondering what your thoughts are on that idea.
Oh, well, so, I mean, let's explain to folks how HELOCs work as I decide whether or not I like that idea or not. So the difference between a HELOC and a home loan is the fact that you take this line of credit out, but you don't necessarily start paying interest on the loan.
And so, unless you actually borrow or draw
until you actually tap those funds, right? Yeah. So you might have like $80,000 that is available to you, but you aren't paying interest, but that is money that you can draw on. And so I think that's a huge advantage that HELOCs have over home loans. But I guess, okay, so I am hesitant to say that everyone should have one because I don't know you and your situation, right? Because if somebody is out there and they have had issues when it comes to spending, then I think having $80,000 just sitting there could be a temptation that might be too great for some folks.
True, yeah.
But from the standpoint of you're listening to the show, you are highly disciplined. You do not have a problem with spending. You know, for instance, you are able to use your credit cards and pay down that balance every single month. If that's the type of person you are, then I agree. I think a HELOC could make a lot of sense.
I think that example is spot on. And that's the one I was going to say too, is that if you handle credit cards well, then having a home equity line of credit at your disposal is one of those things that I think can be like this backup to the backup emergency fund, or even might mean that you don't need to prioritize having 6+ months of emergency fund on hand. You can say, you know what, I feel comfortable with 3 months on hand plus the HELOC, and so it can allow you to maybe do other things with your money, prioritize, you know, investing more heavily or some of those other savings goals that you have because you know you have this low cost HELOC. I will say, you want to shop around when you're looking for a HELOC, and you want to make sure that you're getting one that doesn't have any closing costs. And there are a lot of options for that.
Or if they do have any fees associated with them, that they're as low as possible.
Yeah, they're minimal. Yeah. But I have opened up multiple home equity lines of credit on different homes over the years, and I've never paid a dime to open those up, and I've gotten competitive rates. I will say, in a time of rising interest rates, those HELOC rates are likely to go up, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect you if you've just got it hanging out there as just in case and you're not actually borrowing against it. And so it is one of those things where I think it is a nice, like I said, backup to the backup.
Exactly. And I mean, the best time to get one as well is if this sounds like a good idea for you. And I mean, this is kind of what y'all do, right? Like, don't you, like, you keep closer to around 3 months of money set aside in your emergency fund.
Yeah. And have the HELOC.
And then you've got the HELOC accessible.
Yeah. There's just less necessary. Although I do have more savings on hand now, but it's more for, I think of that savings as more for like pouncing
investment purposes.
Yeah, when there's
exactly. Yeah, but if this is you, if you're thinking, oh, we could really benefit from a situation like this, the best time to get a HELOC is before you actually need one, so that you do have the time to shop around, like Joel said, and hopefully you can find one, for a very low cost or even free at a local credit union.
Yeah, I was gonna say credit unions also a great place to turn for those. Look to some local and mid-sized banks as well, but your credit union, in all likelihood, is gonna have the best term.
That's where we had our last one, which we actually had to close because of of a refi, the bank was like, well, let's make sure we eliminate any other liabilities against that property. And so I might be due to open one up. But the last one I opened up was at a credit union. And yeah, it was totally free.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, let's move on. Let's get to the Friday Flight, the sampling of stories we found interesting this week. And Matt, let's talk about cars for a second. Prices on cars, both used and new, are still just incredibly inflated. And you know what's weird?
Speaking of inflation, we talked about inflation last week, and cars, used cars in particular, we mentioned are leading the charge. Yep. They are leading these higher prices. And so we wanted to talk a little bit more about that.
Yes. So on that note, it's weird because it's actually, in some scenarios, it's costing people more to buy a used car than it is to get a new one.
Yeah.
And it's just like what's up is down in right now in our world. And some things, actually do go up, some old cars, because they're considered vintage. But this is not what we're talking about, where your car crosses that threshold. Now it is 50 years old and it's like, oh, now I want that car with the chrome bumpers. And like,
you're talking about like early Land Cruiser by Toyota, maybe even a Wagoneer.
Like a
not the new
Ford
Wagoneer.
Fairlane or something like that.
Did you like the old Jeep Wagoneers with the actual wood paneling back in the day?
Cool. Those things are cool. Yeah, those are basically vintage now.
I still love those things.
We thought they were hideous growing up.
I loved them. I seriously was. I remember looking when you first learned that someday you're going to drive, which is maybe like you're 12 or 13, thinking, oh my gosh, I get to, like, hopefully I'll be able to have my own car at some point. I remember scouring the local classifieds, specifically looking for those old Jeep Wagoneers. I loved them.
They're cool,
as a kid.
They're cool. Well, here's the thing. I See Cars is a website. They just released information detailing a list of cars, non-vintage cars, that now cost more used than it would cost to go and get them directly from the dealership.
It's crazy.
What's the reason behind this? Well, it's too much demand. There just aren't enough new vehicles to go around. And so, the used car market is responding accordingly. And certain vehicles you're paying even more for on the open used market, like a Tesla Model 3 or a Chevy Corvette or a Kia Telluride, even the Toyota Tacoma, all of those models right now.
Or if you're a baller and you want to get the G-Wagon, those are going for way more.
Mercedes, right? Yeah. So all of those cars now cost more used, somewhere in the range of like 13 to 20% more than the brand new counterparts, just because of a lack of supply. So that is how insane the car market is right now.
Yeah, and we don't want you to overpay for a vehicle regardless. In order to save the most money, it might make sense for you to opt for a different make and model in order to pay less. So for instance, you could save a ton if you say you skip the used Kia Telluride, which is crazy popular, where you're paying more than 12% over sticker price, and opt instead for a brand new Kia Sportage that's currently selling for 7% less than its sticker price. This is according to Consumer Reports. But normally buying even just a gently used car typically means that you'll get that sweet discount. You want to let somebody else take that depreciation hit for you. But that is not the case in this abnormal market that we're currently experiencing. It's still true that if you want to save the most money on a car, that you should buy an older model. But if you are looking for an almost new car, make sure to check the prices on new ones as well, because you might actually save money buying new instead. And trust us, it really does feel weird to say that out loud.
I know. When do we ever really give the advice that buying a new car?
Rarely ever.
It's pretty rare. Although, some people, that's their craft beer equivalent and they've got the money for it and it's like more power to you. But for the most part, and how we live, we're one car families with older rides. And we just think that is just one of the number one ways that you can most easily save a good bit of money, allowing you to funnel it towards more important areas of your life. But
it's the largest line item expense other than housing on everybody's budget.
Exactly. All right. Well, another line item expense happens when you die. Matt, let's talk about death for a second.
nice segue.
We're all going to kick the bucket one of these days. And so why not make the funeral cheaper when you do?
I'm for it.
The New York Times just published an article about direct-to-consumer cremations that will save folks a lot of money. And these companies are catering to millennials and to Gen Zers who are used to doing everything online. I remember when buying a car online was a ridiculous assertion. Mm-hmm. Like, how would you ever buy a car without actually seeing it in person? It's too big, too important of a purchase. But the internet kind of figured out a way to do that. And so similar to that, the majority of death care decisions are currently being made by Gen Xers, who I think would also benefit from sites like these.
Totally.
So why not book that cremation if that's what your loved one desires? And I think something like almost 3 out of 4 people now want to be cremated instead of buried.
I'm all for it.
Yeah. So, but there's certain websites that that make it easy. And so like Irene, Tulip, Solace, Smart Cremation, basically they make it easy to look at pricing and simplify the process. And just it's one of those things where it's an emotional time. And then you add in having to kind of figure out that pricing stuff on your own, where it's very murky, where prices aren't posted in the majority of funeral homes. And so if you can go online to one of these websites and know the price and do it seamlessly, I think that provides not only money savings, but peace of mind too.
Totally. I could absolutely see myself taking advantage of one of these services. I mean, like literally I've talked to my dad about it before. He's just like, totally, cremate me. Like, don't do the whole giant funeral with all the expenses and like the plot of land. He totally wants to just end up being an urn of ashes.
But he said at least not the Folgers can Big Lebowski stuff, yeah. Right?
No. But I do think the biggest hang up is the fact that this is a taboo topic, right? And so just like with money, we want that to be a conversation that we have more often, not only with a partner, but with our friends. And also another conversation to have with our parents is something like death care, which is kind of a weird phrase to say as well. But the more we talk about this, the more we can be prepared to make the best decisions we possibly can down the road when the time comes.
I agree. Yeah, it's one of those things that we often avoid, just like those money combos.
Yes.
But it's important to have them, and also, you know, just to know what your loved one's wishes are. But I think by planning ahead and having those conversations, you can save money at the same time.
Absolutely. Quick cell phone story. The tech site Droid Life, they report that Verizon contracts are getting longer if you purchase your phone through their site. They literally only offer one option now if you don't want to pay cash all at once. And that offer is 36 payments stretched out over a 3-year time span. It's so long. And yeah, that will lower the monthly payments, you know, on that phone. But it's like extending your car loan out to like 7 or 8 years. It's a bad idea because most folks, they don't even keep their cars or their phones for that long. And, you know, when you're ready to upgrade, you are going to be underwater on that device. And to be honest, most folks should be looking elsewhere for service anyway. Y'all have heard us talk about Mint Mobile. We love it. But if you like Verizon's network, Visible, they use that same Verizon network, but they just charge a fraction of the cost. And so if you've been staying put just because, now is a great time to consider making that move and reducing how much you're spending on cell phone service every single month.
Yeah, Matt, and you mentioned MVNOs. Visible is one of those MVNOs.
One of those mobile virtual network operators.
That's right. So they are...
I always like to explain the acronyms for folks.
They're running on the backbone of Verizon, right? And other MVNOs are running on the backbone of others. Like Mint, you mentioned, is running on T-Mobile's backbone. And so, yeah, this reminds me what Verizon is doing, of how AOL, just a few years ago, they still had more than 1 million subscribers paying $20 a month when they weren't really getting anything in return at that point. And this is just like the last ditch attempt to lock current customers in as prices are dropping like a rock. And we have more choice now ever than before. So yeah, what we would suggest is don't ever sign a contract with a cell phone company, much less a 3-year contract, when contracts have largely almost completely gone away. And it's also important to note that you don't have to get your phone where you get your service. And in fact, it makes sense for the most part, not to get your phone where you get your service. But yeah, shop the open market and see if there are better offers elsewhere too. You know, Google Shopping or waiting on a phone sale during the holidays. And that's another one of those things, Matt, that you and I were fans of paying cash for. Like if you have to finance the phone, buy a cheaper phone.
I love it. Let's go ahead and now talk about investing in emojis. Let's get to that story about NFTs. I mean, we talked about...
I bought you the bicep emoji.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, just while you were talking about that.
Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it. So NFTs, these are non-fungible tokens. Basically, it's an easy way to describe them is that they're digital art. We don't have a lot of positive things to say about NFTs. And the Journal, they wrote an article this week about a new investment that you can make, which is basically kind of like the marriage of NFTs and emojis. They're called YATS. YATS. I mean,
I'd rather own a yak, personally,
than a yat or a yacht. It's hard to believe, but people are opting to buy a string of emojis, you know, just like literally in a line for just a few bucks, up to thousands of dollars. If you are basically the shorter they get, the more exclusive it is.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, if you want the like the bicep.
Like with the puff of air probably would be.
It's probably a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so obviously we're not a fan of this. We would recommend for you to stay away. But the question is, a lot of folks are probably wondering if folks are going to make money in the space. In fact, is like I mean, probably, yeah. Like there will be some folks who make some money, but will a lot of folks waste their money hoping that their yacht will soar in value? Definitely. Like, we can almost guarantee that, because it almost inevitably won't go up in value. You know, it's kind of like the stats that we gave about NFTs a couple months ago. Like, some folks, they buy an NFT that skyrockets in value quickly, but the vast majority of NFTs are worthless or nearly worthless. You've often heard the saying, a fool and his or her money are soon parted. We think that that's definitely true here in this case. Although, if you want to spend a few bucks just for kicks, right? I think that's fine.
But as long as speculating, that's a different thing.
As long as you are totally fine with never seeing that money back in your savings account, back in legitimate investments, then go for it.
Yeah.
And so, speaking of which, actually, our ludicrous headline touches a similar nerve when it comes to investing, and we'll get to that one right after this break.
All right, Matt, let's keep the Friday flight rolling. I appreciate that last story about investing in emojis. I find that to be just kind of, like, what can't we invest in these days? You know, we had an episode, a month or two ago about alternative investments and how you can invest in whiskey or wine or farmland. Like, there are all these different things you can invest in. The world is kind of your oyster, but that doesn't necessarily make any of them smart decisions. But let's move on. Let's get to the ludicrous headline of the week. And this one comes from the New York Times, and it reads, TurboTax will let users deposit tax refunds into crypto accounts.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. I wonder how we're going to think about this one. Well, TurboTax has partnered with Coinbase, and they're allowing customers to get their tax refund deposited directly into that Coinbase account in order to start making crypto purchases. And it's not that we hate Bitcoin or Ethereum, like Matt,
or even Dogecoin. We don't hate these things.
I mean, you hate Shiba Inu with a passion, but we both own very, very small amounts of crypto. But this option could be awful for so many folks who have been like hearing rumblings from their friends about crypto, and they're like, you know what? Tax refund time. That's the time for me to get started, and now it's easier than ever. And yeah, there's just so many other money gears that we really want to see you cranking through first, like that fully funded emergency fund or maxing out your retirement accounts before you even get to the point where you're willing to toss a couple grand into speculative assets like crypto. And Matt, most people do get $2,000 or $3,000 in a tax refund. A lot of people do, and it's one of those things where you can make a big mistake when there are other financial priorities you need to be addressing first.
Yeah, and again, it's not that we hate TurboTax. It's not that we hate even Coinbase. I think they're a great exchange if you're looking to dabble a little bit within cryptocurrencies.
Totally.
But it's like you said, there are other things that we want you to do first, and a lot of people definitely do fall into that boat. But as you think through it, yeah, what could go wrong with millions of people, you know, just taking their tax refunds, sticking them immediately into speculative assets like crypto? And it's still sort of like the Wild West when it comes to the different cryptocurrencies and how they're going to be treated. And so just because this is an option, this doesn't mean that you should take advantage of it. We think that most folks should avoid dumping their tax refunds into crypto. I think iBonds, they would be a better choice if you're looking to direct that money into investments. And another thing, you know, TurboTax, we mentioned this before, but they backed out of the IRS free file program. We feel that like that would be such a better partnership that they should be prioritizing over partnering up with Coinbase. I see TurboTax and Coinbase in a similar bucket. It's like they're not terrible. They're just not the most important things that we want you to focus on first.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. I think they should join back with FreeFile. And that kind of still upsets me that they backed out of that. And now they've announced this new partnership. And I'm like, really? You're going to stop making FreeFile readily available to millions of people, but you're going to prioritize letting people stick their money in cryptocurrency. And you mentioned iBonds, by the way, Matt. And we've talked a lot about iBonds on the show. But one thing we haven't mentioned very much is that people can, with their tax refund, there's extra availability to put money into iBonds. And right now, iBonds are still paying that 7.12% rate. And you know, there are other things, there's fine print you need to read because that money needs to stay there for at least a year. But we'll link to where you do that, treasurydirect.gov, in the show notes. That is a viable place to put your money,
yeah.
A smart place potentially to put your money because of the rates we're seeing still.
Absolutely. And you know, you said too that we don't hate Bitcoin and things like that. Like, I guess I want to touch on that again because it's not that we're completely completely against the idea. It's just that we want to make sure you've got your priorities straight. And honestly, I think it'll be really interesting to see how this works out. Because I think of a lot of individuals' experience with a more speculative asset like crypto, like it depends on what the market does, right? And crypto is so volatile that I could see it really panning out poorly for a lot of folks.
Absolutely seen over the last month,
yeah,
right?
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got to be ready for those massive swings. We saw like a 60% downturn from highs back in November.
And then back up.
Exactly, towards the end of January. And if you're not used to that, you could pull your money out at the exact wrong time. But even like the opposite side of the coin can be true as well. What if I could see a lot of folks putting money into crypto, and then over the coming months, we see that just climb over time. I personally think that that's what's going to happen. But then what do you do when you see an asset doing really well? A lot of folks are going to then throw even more money into crypto where they've got way too much money that they're not willing to lose in a very speculative asset.
Too much exposure.
And exactly. And then one of those 30 to 40% declines hits and they freak out because it's not something they've experienced yet and they lose all that money.
Yeah.
That's what we want to see you avoid doing.
Exactly. And you know, we've had the question from listeners before, like, hey, I lost 20 to 30K in crypto. Like that is, you see the headlines about people getting rich. You don't see the headlines about people losing money, but there are a lot of people losing money in that space too, and it's worth noting. All right, let's talk about savings, Matt, cash on hand right now. And yeah, anyone who has a whole lot of money in their savings account, they're more keenly aware these days of the difficult position that they're in because as inflation has gone up, obviously I bond rates have gone up, but savings account rates have gone down and just they haven't budged in quite a while. Like 0.5% I think is still the highest amount that's being paid on any savings account. And that means that the value of your money is deteriorating because of inflation and those low savings rates. And that's why you and I, we talk about investing so much. We think it's so important. Having money in investments is the only way you're going to outpace inflation over time. But some people might be asking, well, with the imminent Fed rate hikes, my savings account is likely going to get a boost soon, right? Well, sadly, that's unlikely.
Yeah.
And a recent Wall Street Journal article detailed why savers won't be the ones benefiting from these Fed rate hikes. The main reason is because banks don't need the money. They're flush with deposits.
Yeah.
And because of that, there's no incentive for them to raise rates in order to attract more consumer dollars right now.
Yeah, exactly. That coupled with the fact that borrowers aren't wanting loans right now, right? So basically the way banks make money is when they make a loan to you, you pay them interest. And then they take that interest and they use some of that money to incentivize more customers to bring their money over. They pay that small interest rate and whatever the spread is, that difference, that is like that's the bank's income, you know, very basically speaking. But because consumers have so much cash on hand, the demand for those loans have gone down, which means the banks are making less money, which means they have less of an ability to make those incentives and dangle those carrots for savers. And so that in turn lowers the savings rate, which means it's just a picture of how everything is so interconnected and just the ripple effects of what a cash infusion like we saw and, you know, the economy shutting down like it did, you know, spring a couple years ago, the long lasting impacts that that can have on our money. And so what does that mean for us savers? It means that 0.5% is it's currently the highest rate that the major banks are paying right now, and it's probably going to remain there.
And even that rate is rare. I think it's like literally just Amex and Ally who are have that rate right now.
Maybe Marcus, like the Marcus
Maybe
account,
Marcus
is,
too.
Is
That's
pretty
right.
close to that,
yeah.
that 0.5% mark. But and so we say this to point out that we want to remind you that cash is not trash because it depends on your specific situation. It depends on how much you should have in cash reserves. But it's also important to make sure that you aren't taking too little risk with your money, you know, opting to sock more away into that savings account because to you it might feel less risky. We have seen a lot of volatility in the markets recently, but like there's just a known risk when it comes to the reality that those dollars are losing value as we speak. We're at 40-year highs when it comes to inflation. Now is probably a great time for all of us to rethink our savings strategy and to maybe determine like how much cash we actually need and if we need to ramp up our investing game to put those dollars to work in the market rather than them just sitting parked on the sidelines in banks that are hardly paying anything at all.
Going back to the beginning of our episode.
Which will then also raise interest rates for the remaining savers, right? Because if more folks are taking their money out, like again, it's all interconnected.
That's right. And that HELOC, again, could be that perfect thing that allows you to, if you're a homeowner, have a little bit less in savings. If you're like, man, I got 9 months in savings over here worth of expenses. That feels like too much. Well, if you still want that peace of mind, a HELOC can potentially provide that.
Let's
talk about credit cards for a second, Matt. Not everyone in the personal finance space loves credit cards like
or
we
HELOCs.
Do.
Yeah.
Right. But you and I, we do. We think credit cards are a good thing for people that handle them well, who pay their balance off on time and in full at the end of the month, every month. If they're used properly, they can deliver fantastic sign-up bonuses, giving people, you know, cash or free travel, which is awesome. I've gotten a lot of Southwest free points for flights because of using credit cards.
Last flight you took was totally free.
Exactly.
Because you had this point set aside.
Free sign-up bonus, like $1,000 cash from Chase. Thank you very much. But yeah, that's in addition to the recurring rewards that you'll get when you use those cards effectively for everyday purchases that you're already making. So if you handle them responsibly, they're great. And, you know, we've published lists of our favorite credit cards for how you spend. We've also discussed which credit cards we personally use. We'll link to those articles in the show notes. But the Citi Double Cash Card has been one of our favorite cards for a lot of years now. And because it's literally one of two cards that we know of, at least, that gives you 2% cash back. Most credit cards.
On everything, no matter what, with no limits.
Exactly.
It's like the Toyota Camry or the Honda Accord of credit cards.
Credit cards.
You can depend on it. It's solid. You don't have to worry about it.
Exactly.
You set it and forget it.
But there's been a lot of hubbub lately because Citi is changing some of the terms for that credit card. And so, yeah, if you're a cardholder, you're going to be getting this information. You probably gotten an email from Citi letting you know that you won't be earning cash back directly anymore. From now on, you'll be getting Citi thank you points instead. And we just want to let you know, it might sound shady, but it's actually it's not a bad thing for you. And really, the 2% cash back thing still applies, and it just needs some explanation.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no need to be concerned. You can still redeem those thank you points for cash back if you'd like. It's just not automatic anymore, but it's not that hard to actually take those additional steps. And also, since you'll now be earning points that aren't automatically converted into cash, you can potentially do other things with the points that you earn by using that card, like redeeming the points for hotel stays or air travel. But this card still works best as a cashback card for everyday expenses where you can't earn higher amounts with other cards, right? Like there's going to be better cards for purchases you make when it comes to travel, you know, groceries, the Blue Cash Preferred, get that 6% going on there with gas. There's other cards that are better for gas. But if you're wanting that 2% across the board where you do not have to worry about it, the Citi Double Cash Card is a fantastic way to go. And if you're, you know, wondering what those other cards are in full, we'll make sure to link to those in our show notes. But that's one of the things I love about that Citi Double Cash Card. So I don't ever use it in person. I use it online only because the vast majority of those expenses, they don't fall within the grocery or the gas categories or restaurants, which is where I typically do most of my in-person spending. So it goes back to that kind of set it and forget it approach. I'm not constantly thinking, oh, which card should I use when I'm going to buy a new shirt online or pay utilities or something as random as renewing our corporation with the Secretary of State. I just did that recently and I used the 2% card for all of those.
Yeah, it's a great card. I just think people are like, wait, I'm only getting points now and not the direct cash back. But the thing is, it's like you still get the cash back.
Exactly.
It's one extra step.
So far, so good. If that changes, we'll let you know.
Yeah, still a great card, at least as of this
at least
recording.
For now.
Yes. All right. Well, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks who want to check out our show notes and they want links to those articles where we talk about credit cards, which ones are the best for different ways of spending, we'll link to those in our show notes up on our site at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And we hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. We've got a great listener question Monday in store for you. But until then, Joel.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.